overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Good morning. And happy Memorial Day. Tomorrow's Memorial Day. And in the organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, they frequently send out these messages to the ministers about what you might want to say on Sunday, which I find is a little disarming because it's never relating to exactly where I'm coming from. But here's what they send us for Memorial Day. A young boy is at his church, and he's looking at the wall, because there are names of people who have made their transition. There was their birthday and the day that they left the planet. It's a whole list of names, and he's staring at it. He's 8 years old. The minister comes into the congregation, and he sees Bobby staring at the thing on the wall, and he says, "What are you looking at, Bobby?" And he said, "I'm looking at all these people that died, Pastor." And he says, "Yes, Bobby, they died in service." And then he says, "Which service, the first one or the second one?" Now, that is what they're telling me to tell the world, to raise consciousness to a higher vibration. Sound, well, a little smiling, though. So at least we can know that part of life is about having a zen zahuma, a sense of humor. And in this beautiful class we're teaching by Parker Palmer, he talks about gravity, getting older, and grace as the perils for all of us. Gravity is this thing that can weigh us down. Sometimes we feel like we're carrying the weight of the world. My little daughter Terry knows what that feels like. But he said, in order to get rid of the gravity, you need a thing called levity. One of my beloveds, she's practicing laughter yoga. I don't see her here this Sunday. Where did you go, Jean? Oh, she's probably back in India with her laughter group. And she said, my seriosity took a shift once I started taking myself lightly. So what if we could have a Zen Zahuma? You know, last night, Trey forced me to watch Anderson Cooper's thing on QAnon and this crazy conspiracy thing that's taking place in the country. And the rest of the evening, Trey's seeing about fleeing the country and moving to Canada. I said, honey, I know it's crazy. They believe that there are... Well, I'm not even going to say what they believe. I said, only crazy people would believe that. And he said, but David, they're everywhere. I said, I know they're everywhere. But you know, crazy is temporary, and hopefully something will awaken within humanity. I've been hoping that my whole life. We had a beautiful revealing service, and I am coming to realize that so many of us were raised in kind of toxic spiritual environments. I know that I was. I was told that I was born in sin, and if you weren't baptized, you were going to burn in hell. I was told by a well-meaning Christian family that some people were chosen and other people were doomed. And as a little kid, I said, this is crazy. This doesn't make any sense. But then you were told to accept things through a thing called blind faith. That's what my mother used to call it, blind faith. Well, I guess I didn't have blind faith. I kept questioning things. And if you keep questioning, and you know, one of the things Jesus said, he said, ask for the truth, and you will receive it. Seek a greater awareness, and you will find it. Knock on the door of truth, and it will open, and the word will come out, enough, I'm done. And when you're done with that fakakta way of thinking, well, then it feels like everything's falling to hell in a handbasket, but really what's happening is there is a phoenix rising from the ashes. There is a new sense of being. And that is what we are here to do, to be this new order of being. This month I'm talking about the art of being. And it's the art of being this evolved place in consciousness where we can look at QAnon and say, that dog don't hunt. There is not some kind of a blood-drinking thing going on. And Donald Trump is the second coming of Jesus? Hello? I mean, he's a very handsome man, I guess you could say. Not. But the second coming? I don't think so. I don't even think any of you are qualified for the second coming, except that the only begotten is ever begetting itself in me right now. So what if it is the Christ awakening on the planet in the Trinity of Being that is the second coming? And Terry nods because she gets it. That's the higher order of truth. But you have to be ready to hear the truth. And the truth comes knocking on your door, and sometimes we push it away. No. I got my blind faith going for me, and I'm going to stick with my blind faith until something happens and you want to experience something that is speaking to the soul. So everything I do at this Center for Spiritual Living is to midwife the soul. The soul is our divine connection to the universe. You know, if you want to study the world's spiritual teachings, they're all saying the same thing. In Hinduism, and I think of this teaching as applied Hinduism, Brahman is the one presence that fills the whole universe. You could call it the Father or the Trinity. And then Atman is the soul, and Atman and Brahman are one. So when we find our soul, we're really finding the universe. And it manifests in form. And all we are is spirit experiencing itself in this egoic structure that we've been handed through life. We've been conditioned by our programming. And now could we wake up in the middle of that and smile at it? In fact, wink at it, laugh at it, like my daughter Terry is doing. She finds herself getting lighter. She's not taking this life thing so heavily anymore. You know, and the early young Terry that I used to know, she used to think about it and try to figure it out and have a new concept. She doesn't do that anymore because she realizes that the problem is the belief system. I was asked to join the Masonic Temple years ago by a fellow congregant, and I said, I don't think a New Thought gay guy would be accepted by the Masons. And he says, well, David, you don't. All you need to do is believe in God. That's all you need. And I said, well, there you have it. I don't believe in God. Well, he was just shocked. You're a minister and you don't believe in God? And I said, no, I don't believe in anything. All belief comes from the ego. I know that there is a presence that is available to all of us, and I access it through conscious breathing and through witnessing the mystery of belonging to the universe. This morning, my prayer partner in Vancouver, Canada, he was lying in his float boat, looking up through the window at the sky. And when we went to do our prayer, he said, I'm looking at the clouds. And I realized that when I look at the clouds, I'm entering into the mystery of belonging. And then when he passed the light to me, and I said, and I'm looking out my window and I'm seeing the same cloud, but I'm seeing the blue, pellucid sky behind the cloud, all a part of the mystery pulling us into itself. So what if we could enter into the mystery of what we are? Not wanting a concept, not wanting a conclusion, not wanting an identity, not wanting some finite structure of me. Because Emerson, my great teacher, said, it's the finite self that wails and suffers. Terry knows what I'm talking about. But this infinite presence, which is what we are, it just says, I am love. Be the love that you are. Beloved Jake sent me a text and he said, all is one and it's a vibration of love. And then he sent me a smiley face. I said, yes, it is. And you are that love unfolding. So what if we could know ourselves as love itself? Wow. Then we can experience the finite self. But we realize that we're this infinite presence that's within ourselves, this presence that lies stretched in smiling repose, and it's waking up. That's what the Buddha consciousness means, the one who awoke. That's what the Christ consciousness means, the awakening of this divine aspect of ourselves. My Zen calendar this morning said, if you don't find heaven within yourself, well, you sure heck aren't going to find it out there. So what if it's about finding this connection to this divine something that we all share? You might call it the breath. A singer would know that. How sacred is the breath? The breath is the one thing that will never leave you or forsake you. In fact, you don't even breathe. The breath is breathing you. So could we get intimate with something as simple as the breath, as spirit? And then when our mind wants to go crazy, and that, let me tell you, every mind is crazy. I've spoken with a lot of you, and every time you get into your head, you're crazy. But when you move into this heart space, then there is a different kind of a expression. And today I'm talking about expressing yourself, or might I say express the self. Now the soul, which is what we are, we're not a body with a soul, we're a soul, an eternal soul, with a temporary thing called a body. The soul wants to express its truth. And sometimes that truth is undone. The ego wants to impress the world. So if you're caught in impressing the world with your stuff, with your beauty, with your things, you're caught in your ego. But if you're finding that there is something that needs to express, I watched Silver Lining Playbook. It was a movie from 2012. I just love the love story. And it's about a very disturbed Bradley Cooper who meets a very young, I can't remember her name, Jennifer Lawrence. And through a simple act of a dance, he couldn't dance for nothing. But she took him into this experience of intimacy through movement, and through this creative self-expression, it was mesmerizingly transformative. Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. And that's the music that they danced to. And it got more and more organic, not as trained dancers, but as two people who entered this ballroom competition and blew everyone away because they were expressing their creativity, not their technique, trying to impress people with what they did. They were expressing the soul. Now, Trey thinks I'm crazy when I watch movies like that, but I liked La La Land too, because they're dancing in the streets of LA and they're setting their soul free. So what if we could be that soul, that jubilant and beholden soul that longs to be revealed on this planet? I go for walks in my beautiful garden, and it's taken a lifetime, well, 25 years, to plant this thing that expresses itself uniquely. My gardenia bushes are in full bloom. I mean, to sit and drink the nectar of a gardenia flower, which is so fragile and beautiful. I mean, you know there is a God when you smell a gardenia. And then the pomegranate tree is bursting forth with these orange flowers that are so ostentatious. Who would want something like that in their yard? And then, you know, you find these vines. And I was walking around the center. Vines are very pretty, but they also choke out the trees. And so you'll have a lovely tree growing, and there is this fragrant clematis that's growing up, and it's choking the very life out of the tree. And so I had to make that executive decision. I'm done with you. And I'm pulling this vine out of the tree, and the vine says, I'm not going anywhere. And so I'm at battle with the vine. But what if it's all a dance? A dance of the one with itself as we reveal the mystery of belonging to the universe. This month, I started off by speaking about You Are God's Seed. You Are God's Seedling was the title of that talk. And I tried to create a whole theme for the month in this art of being. So if it was Meister Eckhart said, if you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. If you plant a pear seed, you get a pear tree. But if you plant a God seed, you get a God. So you have to be so humble to know that we are the seed of God in manifestation. It's the trinity of being. The Father is the Brahman. The Son is you and I. And the Holy Spirit is how it unfolds through this creative expression. It says in the Gospel of Thomas, you can kill the Father and it's fine. You can kill the Son, no problem. But if you kill the Holy Spirit, ye shall perish. So what this says to my soul is that we are this expression that was never born and never dies. And if you do everything and fail to express it, and sometimes it sings through you or dances through you or creates through you or does science through you. I saw this young man, he was brilliant on PBS. And as a young man, he witnessed the death of Albert Einstein, and they showed his desk with all his equations and the chalkboard with the equation of the ultimate reality. And as a young Asian boy, he said, I'm going to figure out the equation that he never could. And so he's written a book called The God Equation, that everything in the universe can be reduced to a simple mathematical formula. Now, that was his calling to express that. And so now he's an older man, and he spent his whole life finding out this equation for the ultimate truth in the universe. And he says, I'm hoping that young people will read my book and carry it further and prove that we're all connected. This is the energy of the divine. So he was called to be God in expression. The second week I spoke about resolve to evolve. The whole teaching of Science of Mind is about involution and evolution. We are here to evolve out of being Homo sapiens sapiens, which is just the human being here, to being Homo universalis, to know that we're the universal human, where we're all connected to the one. You know, I have this little Zen calendar, and it's like an oracle for me, and I'll peel away these things, and they're like seeds that are planted in the soil of my consciousness, and I watch which ones grow. And Jack Kornfield was, I think on Wednesday, Jack Kornfield said, Buddhism, or Zen in particular, pretty much boils down to three things. Everything changes, everything is connected, so pay attention. And I just stopped. I'm in the bathroom and I'm sitting on the John, well, I shouldn't have too much information, and I'm reading this thing. Everything changes, So could we know that this life is impermanent? People are going to come into your life to go out of your life. Bubba Jake may be going to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, but he's never going to leave my heart. Gina and Greg just came in and they said, this is so much like family, but they're going to be moving to Austin, Texas to be with their daughter. And so I said to them, well, just, and they said, but you feel like home to me. And I said, well, just realize that everything changes, yet everything is inextricably connected. So we get to pay attention to the mystery of belonging to this beautiful universe. So Resolve to Evolve was our second month. The third week of May, I spoke about a new order of human being. To be a human being that smiles at their neighbor, that winks at them. My friend Terry, she finds herself kind of spontaneously just giving people a wink. And she says, I hope they don't think ill of me. Well, the soul wouldn't care what they think. The soul just does this kind of thing. It smiles. It embraces. I remember after going to a spiritual retreat, I was so intoxicated on the love that when I went through the TSA at the airport, I was hugging the TSA person. They thought, who is this guy? Because I didn't know anything other than this love. You know, it was 15 years ago, Gigi, that we got Bert. It was on Memorial Day. And right after that, Gigi and I went over to Istanbul and we traveled with the Sufis all around to experience this new order of being human. I hadn't been around the Muslims, especially the Sufis. And every time you would meet them, they would look at you and they would touch their heart and they would bow to you. And it was like a mind-blowing experience. We would be taken into like the Blue Mosque. And instead of doing a traditional prayer thing, you would be given a mat and you would prostrate yourself with your heart, your head below your heart, chanting these things that I didn't even know what I was chanting, but I was having kind of a direct experience of the mystery of Allah. And the chant you would say was, La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah. That means there's nothing but God. La ilaha illallah. Until you actually feel this vibration that all there is Allah, which means the nothingness. Wow. So once again, blowing the mind, blowing the concept of what we think of as God, and having a direct experience of a higher order of being human. Last week, I spoke about giving our gifts. We've all been given this gift of spirit. And if you do everything but fail to access what that gift is, and it's unique to each one of us, it's as if you were never here. Now, the gifts come from the soul. And I referenced a beautiful man that I'm teaching again, because I love him so much, Parker Palmer. And he did the graduation speech at Naropa University, which is a Buddhist university in Boulder, Colorado. Wouldn't it be fun to go to a Buddhist university? And he was giving the commencement address. And he talked to these young people about life is going to have its failures and its successes. And the failures are just as sacred as the successes. And when you fail, learn the lesson, grow through those failures. And then he spoke about their gifts. And he said, seek to find the gift of your soul and then match it to a perceived need in the world so that you care about something and you give that gift to that something, whatever that something might be. You've heard me speak about my beloved husband who is dedicated to trees, to planting trees on this planet. He feels that they're the ancestors of the planet. Now, who am I to deprive him of planting trees around the planet? Let me give you just a little taste of Parker Palmer, and then this is this week's class. He talked about being a contemplative, and he says, I'm a contemplative by crisis. Contemplative is someone who sees what is, but sees through it, sees the truth through the appearance. A wonderful contemplative story that I directly experienced was my friend Helen Street. She was the minister in Honolulu, Hawaii. And there was a deluded woman in her church. And she was married to a ne'er-do-well who was chasing after all the women in the church. Everybody knew it, and she even knew it, but she was devoted to him. Her name was Sally. So one day, Sally came to Helen's office, and she was hysterical. She was pounding on the door, and the secretary said, Helen, Sally's out front. And she said, she's hysterical. Well, what's the problem? Well, it's probably him again. And so Sally came into Helen's office and she says, so what's going on? She said, it's him. He's ran off with another woman. And Helen said, oh, really? What a surprise. And she said, no, it's worse than that. He ran off with my best friend. And then Helen said, oh, she was a good friend, wasn't she? She says, now I want you to go over to the phone right now, Sally, and I want you to call her up and send her a dozen roses and thank her for giving you the greatest gift. So Helen, through her contemplative way of seeing, knew that this was not a problem, but it was a great gift. So could we use our contemplative nature when we see something that is askew out there to see what is the truth that's seeking to be revealed in here? Anastasia knows what I'm talking about. You have to have the courage then to face it, and you can do it with a smile. You know, something is not kosher here, and it's going to take someone to see through the aberration to the narcissist that I'm dealing with. And then it sets you free of reaction, of resistance, and gets a proactive way of meeting it. That's his first thing, contemplation by design. He says, I generally do my contemplations after the train wreck. So he said, if some of you out there need the train wreck, he says, no, that too is good, that too is God. His second thing was, he talks about having a friendship. This is how he learned to express himself, a friendship, a lover, and a rescuer. And strangely, who do you think his deepest friend was? A man that he never met. A man who died before he was born. A man named Thomas Merton. And he found his writings posthumously. And when he started reading Thomas Merton, it's as if something was awakening in his soul. It's as if he had rescued him. He had liberated him. They were like-minded individuals. And that's what this is all about here at the Center for Spiritual Living. It's called a resonant field. And when you resonate with somebody, it's because soul is meeting soul. You're seeing yourself reflected in other. That's the beauty of relationship. And so I was thinking about who has been my rescuer and my lover and my friend. And it was Ralph Waldo Emerson, who died many, many years before my grandmother was born. And this little essay of self-reliance is so threadbare. It's literally in brown. And this little page fell out of this book was a magic. So here's what Emerson talks about expressing yourself. In Self-Reliance, 1843, he says, we but half express ourselves and are ashamed of that divine idea which each one of us represents. We are God in ruins, if you will. We are the way divinity expresses itself. So he's saying we but half express ourselves. And here's what he says. God will not have her work made manifest by cowards. It takes courage to stand up to ignorance and speak the truth. But you have courage to do it with love. And sometimes it feels like a sting or a slap, but that's tough love, as we might say. It needs a divine man and woman to exhibit anything divine. It needs us, the divinity needs us to know that this is what we are. You have to be so humble to know that. In the 8th Psalm, it says, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels, and hath crowned him with honor and glory. When I read that, I think that we are here to honor and glorify the divinity within us by singing to God and dancing for God. You know, even at 72, sometimes I'll put on beautiful music and I'll find myself dancing in the garden because my body feels good. And when I dance, I feel this creative flow coming alive in me. Am I out there to impress the neighbors? No. I try to do it in private areas so they don't look at me. But am I expressing the divine? Absolutely. So he says this, trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string of the divine and accept the place that divine providence has found for you. Divine providence brought you here to Huntsville, Alabama, so that you could shine your light, so you could bring your gift of awareness, whomever you're involved with. He goes on to say, accept this place of divine providence. Great men and women have always done so and confided themselves childlike to the genius of their age, betraying their perception that the eternal was stirring in their hearts, working through their hands, and predominating in all of their doing was their being human, being divine. Well, so here's a man who died over 100 years ago admonishing us to express the divinity that you are. We but half express ourselves. It takes courage. God will not have herself made manifest by cowards. Absolve you to yourself. So then it would require a little reflection, wouldn't it? A little going within. A little sitting down under a tree and saying, is the Buddha going to awaken in me? That's what the Buddha consciousness means, the one who awoke. But we have to first get still, and we have to wait upon the Lord, as it says in the Bible. Wait upon this divine law. And when conditions are right, things manifest. Now, you have to be right, Terry and Mary, for the right time to come to the right place for the awakening. It's not meant to happen until it's meant to happen. That's the beauty of all of this. So when the conditions are right, we will awaken to this truth. The third part that Parker Palmer talks about is, down is the way to our well-being. Stay rooted in the ground of your being, no matter how muddy the water gets. And he puts a kibosh on this old idea that we're here to transcend our problems and ascend into some kind of blissful place. No, he says, go right into the mud, Anastasia, because in the mud, that's where the lotus grows. Go down into the problem. Go down into the resistance. Go down into the shadow. If there's anything that I would say about my early training in religious science, it was they didn't do the shadow work. They would treat it away. They wouldn't face those repressed parts of ourself. If you don't face those repressed parts of yourself, they come to get you in the end. So, but if you can invite them in, this being human is like a guest house, and will come the anxiety, will come the anger. Invite it in, sit it down. It's maybe coming to clean out your house, to show you where you're in resistance, where you're blocked. It may show you your unconscious programming. And so much of what awakening is making the unconscious conscious. You know, there's that wonderful song, I can see clearly now, the pain has gone. Sylvia just went to a family reunion. That's the greatest way to see that that repressed stuff. And she came back glowing and smiling. So obviously she's not carrying a lot of baggage from the past. Could we all have that kind of ability to face whatever it is that has been troubling us and to see it as liberating us? It's all good and it's all here for us and we can demand to see the blessing. The fourth thing he did was he took notes for himself when he went to the winter woods. And then the last thing, when he went to the woods, went into nature, he found himself merging with the sun and the snow. He went up to Wisconsin in January where it was multi degrees below zero. And he went all by himself in his 70s and he went out into the snow and he felt the sunlight on his face and he felt the crispness on his skin of the cold and he felt like he was merging with everything. He was becoming one. So what if by going there in isolation, by being still, he found that he was connected to everything? Everything is impermanent. Everything changes. Everything is connected. Nature is the greatest oracle for that. So pay attention. And when he paid attention, what he realized was that he had come home to himself. Home not as a geographical location here in Huntsville, Alabama, but home as a state of beingness that we always carry within us. Our beloved Charlotte, she picked up Dave, her husband, at the hospital last Sunday. He was getting out of intensive care. He'd had quadruple heart bypass surgery. And when he got in the car, he said to his wife, I have arrived, I am home. And she said, Dave, that's what it says at the center. And he says, I know. And I texted her back when she said that. And I says, he has arrived and he is at home in the heart of love, which is what the two of you share. So could we let ourselves have a higher order of understanding where this expression is coming from? It's coming from that place within us that longs to be revealed. And each one of us gets to find that for ourselves. It's a discovery process. Dr. Ernest Holmes, in the very first page of The Science of Mind, he says this infinite intelligence of the universe would not awaken within us if it wasn't meant to be discovered. He says, but each of us has to discover this connection for themselves. So when I'm 25 years old, lying on a dance floor, working on my master's in dance, the choreographer said, all movement is discovered. It's not invented. In a holy instant, it's like an epiphany came through my mind. It's all a discovery process. Emily can't show me how to move and make it David's move. It has to come from within this experience as an expression of this soul. So what if every artistic expression is that creative something coming through, and our job is to become an instrument for that divine something? We used to sing a song here. Maybe Emily would sing it to me someday, but it goes, use me, O God. I stand for you, and here I'll abide as you show me all that I must do. Command my hands, they're here for you. Command my heart, it's here for you. God is the love that heals all creation. You know, and then it's like you're surrendering to it and inviting it in. Yesterday I was working on my talk, and I like to work in silence, but every now and then I'll put Pandora on, and this soft music is playing in the other room. I was reading about remembering the divine and where is the divine speaking to you. And I'm sitting in the garden and the flowers are all around me. And all of a sudden this song comes on. And it was just the music. Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me. I'm hearing the divine sing to my heart. Above all, I want my arms about you. Don't be a naughty baby. Come to mama do, my sweet embraceable you. And I'm sitting there with tears coming down as I'm feeling embraced by the universe. So could it start by knowing that we are so loved by that something and then create this portal of receptivity so we can be an avenue through which the light shines. We can be an avenue through which the love pours out. We can be an avenue where the creative something can offer maybe the equation that will change the whole universe. You know, Albert Einstein says in the poster in the men's room, he says, I don't want to know what man thinks. I want to know what God thinks. Huh. Could we put ourselves in debt to the universe, not in debt to the world, and then dare to think not with the mind, but with this something that is so much vaster, that spacious something that knows, you know, and then you kind of think you're going crazy because all the conclusions and all the thoughts and all the programming seem to fall away. And there is this something that's fresh. I taught this class years ago. It's called Ordinary Freedom by John Burney. And he's an awakened soul who speaks about our true nature as free. And we're bound because we're bound in our thoughts and our beliefs and our conditioning. So could we find that ordinary freedom is at the core of everything? And we're coming up to July pretty soon, and I love speaking about freedom. And he talks about the essential nature of this discovery process. And so he says, on the one hand, it gets easier and easier to express this divine nature. He said, and on the other hand, it gets more and more difficult and more intense. Some of you are experiencing the intensity of it, the difficulty of it, the struggle of it. And when that happens, it's because there's still too much of you in it. It truly expresses when we surrender and we can laugh, like Anastasia's doing. She's nodding her head. Then you're not the doer. You've never been the doer. And then you'd have no attachment to the outcome, because the ego wants an attachment to outcome. The soul says, you know, if I treat for the right and perfect relationship and the one that I'm in falls apart, well, that's the universe moving me in a new direction. So you begin to laugh about it. It gets easier. He says, it's paradoxical, actually. The water gets calmer and the fire gets hotter. He says, we can just sit where we are in this present moment. And the presence in our being together is really the fire of transformation. To know God is the fire of transformation right there at the core of your center. Play with that. The fire of transformation. And if you feel this presence, then just allow it to happen. Allow it to flow. Allow it to express, dare I say. But if it's bringing up unfinished energies that are in you, we'll then feel free to engage those unhealed energies. And we'll do a little dialogue. Because as you face your truth, whatever that is in the moment, and you're really able to express this truth, the process contributes to everyone's letting go. We find the truth. We dare to speak the truth sets you free, but it might irritate the rest of the world. And that's okay. Beloved Michael here was at work, and one of his employees was whistling all this crazy sound, and it was driving him crazy. He couldn't do his work, and he said, shut the you-know-what up. And he said, it felt so good. It felt so good to speak the truth, whatever in that moment. And you're really able then to express this truth, and it takes courage to express that truth. That process contributes to everyone's letting go, and that's why it's fun to do this in a group setting. It's the mutual freeing up of everyone. And when you're here, you can feel it happens. Presence always activates that which is still unfree. Could we liberate that which we've exiled? Now, for me, what was exiled was my little boy, who was sensitive and vulnerable, extremely creative and imaginative. And I had repressed him and shoved him down. And after the heart attack, he showed up and he wanted to play again. He wanted to hug the world. He was an extremely loving little child, and I had to make a vow that I would not exile him anymore. When he wanted to go and love that young lady over there, I'd say, you go ahead and hug her. He says, truth is not believable. Truth is, period. Has nothing to do with belief. It has nothing to do with belief. Oh, see, he's finishing my sentence. He says, to the extent that you believe your beliefs, you're going to suffer, and other people will suffer too. So just read the news and smile. And when you really let go of all your beliefs, what breaks loose is a profound sense of equanimity. When you let go of the idea that you have the answers for anyone, especially yourself, then you're free to discover how the universe wants to unveil itself yet again in a creative sort of way. And through lowly listening, the soul is going to guide you. I know it has me my whole life. But we tend to not listen to the soul because we get pragmatic. Well, I've got to do the responsible thing. I've got to go there and make the income and do the job that I hate, even if it's killing me. I've got to stay in that loveless marriage because, you know, you make a commitment to until realize you can leave the loveless marriage and you're set yourself free. You can leave the job you think is killing you and you could be in the wasteland and look. And ultimately, when I started studying at the center in Atlanta, I realized that I was a mess. And I was working on getting my act together. And all the work is inside job. And when I'd finished taking all those classes for 4 years, I reached a plateau where I could go out and become a minister. But you know, many, many are called and few are chosen. And I realized that my calling was my soul's calling to continue to unfold and to reveal and evolve. Oftentimes in a teaching that didn't support that evolution, because it was using a mental science to manifest what you want, and that never really was important to my soul. My soul wanted this creative essence of the divinity to unveil itself, first within myself and then within all my community. Because there is nothing like living in the God place where you begin to experience a communication with the divine. Now, in our class, Parker Palmer talked about communication, and he said it's really more of a communion. Now, you know, communion is very tantric. We drink the blood of Jesus and eat his flesh. That's really Passover. What communion would be, where you sit with a tree and you and the tree become one. You hold a rock in your hand and I and the rock are one. I was doing one of my shamanic workshops early on in the ministry, and I invite the students to all go into nature to find an oracle, something that speaks to their soul. And they would come back with a vine, with a flower, and the flower would be having this relationship with each one. But the woman I met, remember so vividly, she came back with a rock and she was holding the rock in her hand. She's crying. Oh. I said, "What's wrong, Sally?"
"No, this rock knows it's a rock and I don't have a clue who I am."
I said, "Oh, Sally, that's such wisdom, such wisdom." And after a while, you know, she began to fall away, the self that she had identified with. And she realized that maybe the rock and she had this communion. The rock was solid. The rock was peaceful. The rock was holding her as she was holding it. So there was this different kind of connection. And by her willingness to step out of this crystallized identity of her personality, she began to kind of fall apart and then come together in a new way of seeing things. So much of what we do here is to see life with different eyes. When you see it, it changes. When you see the possibility. I was reading Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements. And in his culture, he came from the Toltec spiritual tradition, which is a shamanic tradition. They talk about everything out here is the dream. It's the creation of consciousness. They talk about that in Hinduism. They call it the Maya, the dream, the illusion. And so oftentimes we get trapped in the dream of what this is. But in the Toltec tradition, they say, dare to dream a new dream. Dare to have a new idea. Anastasia is having a new idea of her relationship with her family. And when you dream it, it will begin to unfold, but we have to see it and then feel it's really true. So I'm seeking to dream a dream. I dreamed a dream of people getting along, of a country that's claiming its democracy. I dreamed a dream where everyone's equal to marry whoever they want to. You know, when you've been in a country where you were illegal for so much of your life, and then all of a sudden the Supreme Court makes a decision and you're legal one day, you still have that baggage that you carried up until that moment. You know, this is apparently the 100th anniversary of that massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where white people went in and just with airplanes killed so many of the blacks in that culture. We have what they call a lynching museum in Montgomery, Alabama. Could we own our own dysfunction in our country and through that make amends and do some healing work? We were wrong. You know, we're all created equal. It's not just white people. You know, and then see how that takes us in our evolutionary spiral. I was sitting in the garden yesterday, and I was talking to my plants. And I said, like the Salvia guaranetica, that's beautiful, may I offer the indigo blooms of my being to the hummingbirds that drink the nectar. And like the chipmunks and the squirrels, may I revel in the labyrinth of highway in my trees over the house. And like the birds, may I find the song in my soul and sing it so that it can sound. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I realize God is singing when the birds are singing. Like the tree, may I breathe life's air so humanity can survive. We wouldn't live without these trees. And like the soul, may I hold it all in a blessed embrace. Lastly, like the sycamore out here that's pushing through the asphalt, may I beat the odds stacked against me and may I thrive. Every time I walk through that back door and I see that sycamore who's pushed herself through that thing and she is growing and she's sassy and big and beautiful, she's expressing who she is. Doesn't that not give you faith? All the odds were stacked against her. A seed landed in a parking lot and managed to put down its roots, and it has no area to get water, and yet she survives. She's thriving. So could everything be a doorway for us to experience the expression of God? And when you see it, you're literally awakening within you. All you ever see and all you ever get is yourself, and it's all you. So lastly, I went to the gardener. He's my little oracle. And this is a Spanish book that was translated into English. He's a poet. And he describes from a gardener's perspective, from a mystic's perspective, to his young student, how to listen to life when life is trying to get your attention so that we might find a deeper order of expression. First, we get to hear how it's expressing and realize we're really experiencing our own expression. And so this is, I've read this book a million times. It's called The Language of Life. And he says, The gardener says, it's time you were learning the language of life, Bubba Jake. He says, the language of life, said the apprentice. Well, what's that? The gardener says, it's the language that the world surrounds you, expresses itself in. Remember, nature is the thinnest oracle to spirit. It's the language that the world which surrounds you expresses itself in. It's the language of life and the way the rest of the universe communicates with you. He's telling this young apprentice that the universe is communicating with you. And here's how he goes on to say. He says, the young man says, I think I understand it, said the young boy. With you, I've learned to read the trees and the flowers. I've learned to listen to the birds. I've learned to feel the insects. And to discover, there's that D word again, to discover the hidden lesson in everything that surrounds me. Everything is pointing to the divine. Wheresoe'er I look, I see the face of God. Could you understand the language that it's expressing? He's saying to this young man. Sometimes nature, life, tries to speak to you directly, to send you a message. And how will I know that life is trying to tell me something? He asks the teacher. And the teacher says, you're simply going to know it. The gardener answered him. There is something within everything and within everyone that lets them know that what has just happened means something. Something important that one has to decide. Coincidences don't exist, he says to the young man. And when something happens that calls your attention, there's that pay attention, that calls your attention in that special way, it's because there is a message behind it. Zen calendar, 3 days ago, Mary Oliver. The one thing my wild, wild soul knows for sure is that it's all about attentiveness. So is the soul paying attention? He said to the young man. And how does one read those messages? The younger man asked him. And here's how he says how you read the messages. He says, you don't do it with your head. You do it with your heart. And the language of life is in some way similar to the language of dreams. Here's that dream a new dream. It speaks in images, and it makes an impact on your heart. The images that create clear sensations that allow your mind to open up to a deeper understanding. And then he gives examples. The stork gives the feeling of good news, of something about to be born. when you see a stork. He says the wild boar promotes bravery and courage when you see the wild boar. A sudden storm carries away those already dead that are holding back the intentions of life. And a soft breeze that suddenly rises in the afternoon calm gives a sensation of a caress on being heard by heaven. When the heart is prepared to listen, something happens just because it feels like it. When the heart is ready to listen, something happens just because you're ready to feel it. Huh. Is it that simple? Yeah, I think it is. You know, I'm going through this beautiful dance with my beloved Bert. He's 16 years old, 142 in human years. And every day, it's such a grace-filled thing. And again, my Zen calendar was quoting Lao Tzu, who said the spiritual path is about simplicity, patience, and compassion. It's as simple as him having a bowel movement and going to the bathroom. It's as simple as him trying to eat his food. He can't eat from the bowl. I have to hand feed him. The patience that it requires for this old dog to walk from the back door to the front sidewalk where he gets his drink of water, and then to walk down the sidewalk to the front steps where he maybe can put his front paw on the first step, and then I lift him up the rest of the steps. The patience that that takes is holy patience. And the last thing is it awakens compassion. You know, somebody else might say, you know, he's old, you need to put him down. Whereas somebody might say, he's in those beautiful part of life where he's so humble and so appreciative and so deeply grateful. And so I see him as my great opportunity to express love at a different way. He said, I think I understand you, says the apprentice, but I would need time to be able to read clearly this language of life. The gardener looked at him with love in his eyes. He says, you've got all the time in the world, my young friend. So make use of it. Open your heart to life. Listen to it. And the messages will become clearer to your soul under the pleasant robe of silence. Huh. They'll become clearer to you under the pleasant robe of silence. It says, be still and know that I am God. Jesus said, be like the lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they struggle. Yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. So could we listen to the lilies of the field and hear this message that is reflecting to us how we are to express to be like a lily? So I invite you to step into a lily. And if you can't imagine yourself as a lily, find another something to step into, to have communion with. For that lady friend, it might be a rock. Maybe it's a tree. For me, one day I merged with a worm, a little earthworm. I didn't see myself as anything separate. I saw it all as a part of the one life that we share. And in that, I could hear the gospel of the earthworm that says, I'm here to break up blocked soil so that we might be able to put our roots down deeper into the soil, into the soul of life. And so then I merged with the soil and have communion with the soil, and I realized I am the ground of being supporting life here on the planet. Maybe the soil is the Divine Mother, and we just call her just soil. No, she's soil. She's soul. And then I turn to the tree and I see it reaching toward the light. And then I realize that its roots are deeply rooted in the ground of being. And I take communion with the tree and I say, let me express as you do, not being attached to my leaves, but let them fall so that I might go dormant and find a new life emerging every spring. And so when life becomes a gospel, and gospel means good news, then I can hear the language of life. And like that young apprentice, I can be still and hear that the universe never stops speaking. But it speaks a silent language. Silence, is the language of God. And so when the birds sing, I hear the song of God. And when the wind blows, I feel the caress of God. And when the urge to dance moves through my body, I feel the expression of God in form, sculpting space, not caring who watches. There's a bumper sticker that says, dance as if no one is watching. And so there's no self-conscious me anymore. There is only this jubilant and beholden soul ready to reveal itself yet again. So breathe in the awareness of your soul. Exhale consciously. Breathe in now, making a commitment to this soul. And put your hands over your heart in prayer fashion, and let's join in the heart salutation and say to this expression of the soul, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest expression of my being.
You are the deepest expression of my being.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
It is safe to express who we are.
Safe to express who we are.
And so we celebrate life.
So we celebrate life.
With every smile.
With every smile.
With every wink.
With every wink.
And every laugh.
Amen.
We open our heart, we open our hands, we open our eyes, and look at those beautiful faces. You're looking at yourself, this only one here. Go with God and be all that you are.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.